I've got to tell you, when I met you a couple weekends ago, and you showed me pictures of this flying motorcycle.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. It was an unbelievable design. Tell me about this and how that started.
Well, first of all, the reason it's a motorcycle is you basically have to choose your battles when you're developing new machinery. And one of the things I wanted to make sure in this machine was that it was completely legal in the air and on the ground. Because when I first started discussing this with some people, they said, well, you can't do it. It's just not allowed. It was funny that I was effectively assaulted by people trying to keep the status quo of what you can't do. So, again, in researching it, I just said, you know what? It's a lot easier to make motorcycles in this world than it is to make cars because there's a lot of fewer rules regulating.
Right.
So that was the approach I took. And also, people that ride motorcycles are genuinely optimistic people. They don't mind getting in the rain. They believe they're going to get there safely. Everyone says you're crazy, but they know they're good. So I started down that path with it, and I effectively built the first one. It was actually my first motorcycle. I built the first one at a factory up in outside of Santa Cruz, a place called Calfee Designs, a bicycle factory. Myself and Craig, we pretty much put our heads down and made this first one, and we flew it back in 2006. And the photos I showed you were effectively, you know, stuff that we've kept under wraps until recently. And,
sure.
And I really appreciate you having me here and just kind of rolling the project out.
And we've got a link for you on your Facebook.
Okay.
And people can see a sketch at coasttocoastam.com. You know, years ago, there was a television show, a cartoon, I loved it when I was a boy, called The Jetsons.
Of course.
And when I said to myself at that little age, as I said, you know what, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to have my flying car, and this is going to be great.
You and everybody.
You know, here I am now, getting to the age I am, still no flying car for me.
Right.
What happened to that promise?
Well, some people, I think, first off, with the Jetsons, it gave people a preconceived notion about the minimum that they would expect. So effectively, we had to wait around for someone to develop flubber.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that the only way that was valuable to fly was if you took off vertically, if you could put your machine in your suitcase, et cetera, et cetera. So again, you have to kind of back off. And one of the reasons I kept this project quiet up till now is I really wanted to kind of redefine what people's expectations would be. Otherwise, if you didn't have that, they would just genuinely be, you know, disappointed. So, the problem with the Jetsons, of course, is that, first of all, it's a cartoon, and it has the validity of bears that walk upright and play tricks on park rangers.
Yeah.
So what I needed to do with this was make sure that I had something, again, that would work. And I would say that, you know, there have been registered about 1,800 attempts at making flying cars. And the value of them is that when you're flying, if you need to land and drive the rest of the way through bad weather, et cetera, you can do it. It's a safety thing. Also, if you have the machine with you, situations turn bad, you can find another way home. So it's not a bad version of two things. It's actually a very, very good way of getting around. And that's why people have been struggling to make them for years. And I've kind of lost track of your question, but I guess the bottom line is with the Jetsons, don't hold your breath for flubber or to float around, but what I did was something that works today. And as long as people are at the leading edge of technology, you're always at the front. If you're just waiting for something to be developed, then you're just not in the game.
You know what traffic is like in Los Angeles.
Sure.
If you're on this motorcycle,
mm-hmm,
and you're stuck in traffic, are you allowed to just go right up and then pass everybody
again
in the air?
We're back to the rules. The first thing is, if imagine you're in traffic. And the other thing is, I didn't make this for LA. I made it for big cities. I made it for Sao Paulo, Brazil, Beijing. Have you been to these places?
I have not.
Mexico City, it takes you 12 hours to get around Sao Paulo across town in the middle of the day, and there are freeways of helicopters. So it's even tougher there. With this machine, one of the reasons the motorcycle is, imagine you're in New York and you want to get across town. You're going to get there by Learjet, train, whatever. Fastest way across town is with a motorcycle. If you're on a Vespa scooter, nothing's going to beat it. You know, people drive around in Lincoln Town cars, forget it. Vespa's the way. So if you're in traffic and it's a motorcycle, you can split lanes. The Harley-Davidson guys have been very, very good about lobbying to keep it able to split lanes between cars because, you know, they have air-cooled engines. They got to keep moving.
Sure.
So rather than sitting, you know, people have locked themselves into automobiles that look more and more like living rooms than they are ways to get around. People are going slower now than they did 20 years ago. Freeway speeds drop every year. So in this situation,
and traffic increases,
of course. So now, if it is a bike and you're in LA, you can get in the carpool lane. You can go between people. And one of the main reasons I made this was, you know, if things go wrong and you talk about LA traffic, imagine if you wanted to get out of here. It's not something you can just do. And as far as flying out, we've got, there's 20,000 airports in the United States. So you pull over, you drive to an airport, you sneak your way around cars, you get to an airport, you take off, and you fly.
Okay, so you have to take off from an airport. That's you can't do it from the street.
That's correct. And you can't drive 56 in a 55 zone. So again, if things get really wrong, you would like to have some options. But the reality is, I designed this one. It's a gyroplane.
And what does that mean?
What it means is that it's effectively, it's like a sycamore leaf. It falls off a tree. It just spins. Exactly.
Yeah,
and okay. It's something that can fly with the engine off. It can fly quietly. But the other thing is that I didn't design this. The reason I jumped in the pool, I'll just say, is that, again, it's a matter of choosing your battles. If people fly into a city in a helicopter and they land on a roof, for instance, that helicopter is going to sit there until the guy leaves.
He's ready to leave again.
And he's used up the space, right?
Yeah.
What I wanted to do is I wanted to make something you could fly into a congested area and land and then drive out.
Yeah.
Not take off vertically as you described. Because, I mean, every time you've flown in an aircraft, you didn't take off vertically.
Do the props fold?
Yeah, they fold up. So the rotor blades fold up. And what that means is that when you land, you really land. It's not like the wind's going to gust and blow you over. But it gives you the ability to fly in at a very, very low landing speed. I'm more interested in landing slow than taking off vertically. And this one will land about 12 miles an hour, basically. So if you got a headwind, it's straight down.
How high up can you go?
Well, this thing will get to about 10,000 feet.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, in the next term, yeah. So that'll get you over pretty much any mountain range in the States.
All right. The question I hate to ask, but I have to.
Yeah.
Something happens to the engine. You know, these things happen. Do you have a parachute? How are you going to...
Well, then you're the sycamore leaf. Then you just land. And you can land very slowly just about anywhere within the size of the rotor blades, effectively.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the main reason I picked it. Yeah.
Do you go straight down while you're... You know,
you go. The glide ratio is about 4 to 1, so you can basically pick a distance.
Pick a spot.
So if you're a mile up, you can fly, 4 miles in any direction.
Okay, yeah. And just pick
crosswinds
spot
don't matter with rotor blades. And the other thing is, gyroplanes are designed. The reason they were designed back in the 30s was so they would be a wing that wouldn't stall, so you wouldn't have the problem of flying too slow and falling out of the air. It's something that could just effectively land safe.
What kind of training would someone need to be able to fly one?
You'll need to be a pilot. I'm not trying to find a way around that. You need a license to fish. You need a license to cut hair. You need a license to fly. And you owe it to people on the ground. You don't want to fall on their heads. So a person will need a private rating or a sport plane rating to fly a gyroplane.
All right.
And that's 20 hours minimum, but hopefully they'll spend more time learning.
When you start producing them,
yeah,
how much are they going to cost people?
Well, right now, I'm not so focused on producing them as I am developing them. But, I mean, at the end game, they'll be as low as $100,000, I would imagine, or less. And the reason I come up with that number is basically a sport bike will cost you $10,000. And you can buy a gyroplane today for around $30,000. So it's not something that's going to be a quantum leap more than that, but there will be some integration. And because you have two machines together, you want to reduce the weight. The reason cars don't fly, basically, is they're too heavy. Cars are cheap. You buy an SUV today, it costs you about the same per pound as cheese.
Yeah.
And I don't mean good cheese. I mean the bad stuff, the stuff Reagan gave away, right? So you get a 7,000-pound SUV, and alternately, if you buy a bicycle that people really care about, the efficiency of it, now you're in hundreds of dollars a pound.
Yeah.
So when you have an aircraft, effectively, by cutting the weight, you're increasing the cost. And it's not something that's outrageous. It's something manageable.